You are listening to M2 Women Journey to Excellence podcast series. These conversations are from our live forums held in 2018 and 2019. For more details, go to journeytoexcellence.co.nz.
On that note, everyone, I'd like to hear from you how, just finally, before we ask for some take-homes and then take some questions from the floor, how can we fix this? We've been talking about it. This is my fourth or fifth panel that we've done at M2 Women. The numbers are not improving. They're not improving at all. We're still talking about it. How can we fix this?
I think it's genuinely a top-down, bottom-up. I think, you know, organisations have to focus on the pipeline coming in. They have to be very overt around Māori, Pacifica and gender and making sure that there's a really good balance coming in. We're doing a look now. I mean, we know, and it happens, right? Females have kids and they decide they don't want to come back to work because they actually want to stay at home. And that's fine. That's great. So if you know you're going to have a cliff between 32 and 36 of women leaving, you've actually got to overcompensate for that somewhere before they get to that age so that you don't have this massive drop-off of people. So I think organisations have to be overt. They absolutely have to look at pay parity because we know that that is when a person's career accelerates the most is between 30 and 40 in terms of your seniority and how quickly you move up an organisation. It's when your pay accelerates the most, and it's when females are off on maternity leave. So I think organisations have to address that as a part of the problem to bringing females back. And I think there has to be some sort of top-down drive around quotas and making it happen, because I don't think genuinely until you get really strong board, senior management, middle management, populations that have a lot more diversity, I don't think you'll really create the culture where diversity is celebrated. I don't know what it feels like to be a Māori and Pacifica who has grown up in a low socioeconomic environment and have to come and survive in a corporate. My parents were corporates, so that's what I know, and that's why I've been successful. I don't know what it feels like to be them. I don't know what it feels like to be gay. I don't know what it feels like to be in the communities that we need to fix this. So I think it won't be till we get really good representation from those groups and people who actually know how it feels and actually have empathy from a personal level, we won't change it.
I think like for organisations, corporates, New Zealand, focus on what the benefits of that is. What is the value of us having more diversity and being really clear about that, that it's not something to be hit over the head of with, you're not doing this. It's actually, I feel it inside myself. This is the right thing to do. It's going to make my business better. It's going to make the nation better. So I think that's a place to start. So that's the external. And then I think internal, more women putting their hands up, more Māori Pacifica people, you know, of minorities, putting our hands up and saying, actually, you know, I want to do this. I'm up for it, you know, and then as part of that, calling on support, and then the rest of us supporting, and then also check your bias. I recently did unconscious bias training, and I was like, you know, I'm a Māori woman. I got this sorted. I know what that's all about. Actually, I'm a bias machine. You know, and people in the room, you know, oh, they spelt that word wrong. No care for detail. They're out the door. That wasn't me. That was some other people. And it's actually okay. They spelt a word wrong, but actually, maybe everything else is okay. So actually, being aware of your own bias and how you might have that, actually enable more people to come on through.
Was it useful, the unconscious bias training?
Yeah. You know, and they talked about merit, how merit is a way that actually we exclude people, and also team fit. You know, oh, will they fit with the team? I've got this team that looks like this, and I'm just not sure if that, you know, they're going to fit in, and actually that's a big way that we exclude a whole lot of people. And also, you know, one of the things that it's taken me a long time is that sometimes, really quickly, you know, it would be great if we learned all our lessons with unicorns bouncing on rainbows that came and said, here's life's lesson. That often doesn't happen like that. It's actually pointy elbows, you know, Big Mac trucks in your face. And so actually, you know, that kind of tension sometimes, not too much of it, but that actually is what creates things, and actually not to be afraid of that. You know, you need to manage it, not have it get out of control, but actually a little bit of difference, a little bit of pointy elbows is actually all right.
Yeah, I think, you know, challenge with respect, you know, I think that's kind of got to be something. And I think we've all got to take a look. I think, you know, anybody here that's a leader, that's bringing on people, we just absolutely have to be the change. You know, hats off to the banking industry, you know, three incredible women leading, you know, these large banks in New Zealand. We've got to see more of that. You know, the NZX year one, like, you know, there is a movement, and you're right. You know, maybe it's like one of those things that, you know, it's taken 10 years and having the continued conversation. I certainly feel way more valued and supported than I certainly did 20 years ago. And looking at the young women entering our business, hearing them saying they really do feel included. You know, we've got an incredible LGBTI community where, you know, an amazing guy called Stephen, I took him to Barrowdene College and my daughter goes, we were asked to do a careers day conversation and we're there in the chapel and he opens up and goes, hi, I'm an openly gay man. And he said, oh God, are they going to, you know, struck me down? And his speech was all about feeling empowered to come to work every day being his authentic self and that he felt supported and he, you know, I was just going, wow, this is what it's got to be about. So my advice is be the change in this room. Go and ask and absolutely, you know, challenge with respect.
Find an incredible leader like Vanessa. The fact that you've got employees that are that comfortable in their skin is a real testimony to how you're doing it.
It takes everyone.
Look, I think I probably sound a bit pessimistic in a lot of what I've said, but I do believe our society is changing for the better and that we are making enormous progress in respect to many of these issues. We're just not making it in the area where I work primarily, which is a bit of a disappointment. The thing I believe is that it's like any other addiction. If you're addicted to gender inequality, because you think you benefit from it, and to break people from it, you need to stage interventions. So you need people to be pretty firm about the harm it's doing to the individuals in your business or in your community. You need to be harm about the level it's doing, about the harm that it's doing to the people at the top too. I think the biggest thing we can all do here is recognise that we're all imposters. I'm an imposter. Half the time I don't know what I'm doing and I'm making it up as I go along. That's true of your chief executive as well. That really sexist person who's insisting that you must have someone who looks like this or that come onto the board or in that position is as insecure as you feel about your job as well. They may project security, but it's almost certainly, in my experience, not true. And so what we've got to do is be open about the fact that we're all imposters, we're all trying to make it up, we're all trying to do the best we can, and sometimes you just have to intervene to make it change.
We're all human. Yeah. Is there anything left that anybody would like to say before we open up the questions from the floor? Is there anything we haven't covered that you're burning to tell us? It may come out in the next half an hour.
I would just say I agree with Rob. I feel very positive about the generation coming through. You know, they're very socially aware, socially conscious. They really passionately believe in diversity. And it's just a way of life for them, right? They don't actually see it as a problem. So I do think that we've got an amazing generation of people coming through. It's just the 20 years away.
Fantastic. Thank you, guys. Have a sip of water while we get some microphones around the room. Now is your time to ask any questions that you would like to of these wonderful panelists. So if you've got a question, pop your hand up and here we go. Lady over here, Jennifer, someone will bring you a microphone so we can all hear you. Can you see her there, Jen? Yep.
Hi. Really interesting discussion. I work for a reasonably large company, not a corporation. Female CEO, all male board, all male senior leadership team. It's very clear that she is very happy being the only rose among those thorns. What do we do about women who sabotage women?
Great question.
Do you want a
Be honest and tell them. Be honest and tell them.
You know, it's not uncommon. I've observed that. In fact, just this week, I've got on my plate a situation where someone who the board and senior management team thought should be appointed to a role. We arranged for this woman to meet with a couple of our senior executives, and she spent the hour talking to the men and ignored the woman. And the woman, I'm very pleased, complained about it and said she didn't think she would make a very good member of the team, and told us why. And I think that was really good. So look, it does happen, but I think it's part of that, and I've seen it in many instances, currently and past in my working life. I think it is part of that insecurity and imposter syndrome, and the only answer I can really see for it is for us to develop the ability for that radical candor, that ability to for people to speak up without it seeming like a personal attack, without us needing to feel that we have to be defensive about it, but look at the issues in a more this is a contradiction in terms. I was going to say more dispassionate and caring way, and those two are opposite, aren't they? So I'll opt for caring, in a more caring way and more thoughtful way. But look, your observation is right, and the only answer I can see, it's just another version of the insecurity issue to me.
And I would talk to her. I have worked for someone similar. And, you know, I just said to her, you know, you need to be a role model for diversity within the organisation. And we need to work on a plan and a program and think about how we want this to turn up for our people and work them through what that looks like for the organisation and then get to the glaringly obvious gap. So I would sit with her and try and get the buy-in around what we want to do from an organisation and how we're going to see that move and what we want to do to develop females in the organisation, and then get to the, well, they're looking up and this is what they see.
I was going to say, it's hard to know what's going on in her world. I think one of the things I work with a lot of younger female entrepreneurs, and they're amazing. They're so amazing, and they're so accomplished at such a young age, you know, doing these things. And I had to check myself, because I actually found I was in a situation with a number of them where they're like, and now I want to do this, and I want to do that. And I'm like, thinking in back of my mind, sort of unconsciously, oh, you know, that took me a really long time to get this, you know. Thinking, you know, maybe you've got to earn your stripes. And I went, hang on to it, you're doing that thing, holding back these, you know, and because I had this assumption that actually they had to earn their stripes, they had to go through the same hardships that I did, actually those next generations coming through, maybe they're leapfrogging me, and actually that's great, but it's amazing how even when you feel that you are really dedicated to the cause, you do still have to check yourself.
Fantastic answer. Next question. It's down the back there, please.
Thank you. Hi. How do you get Māori, Pacifica people to put their hands up for more leadership roles?
All well qualified to answer this. Kate, Vanessa Tui, go.
Yeah, so in my world, you know, with startups, there were just hardly any Māori and Pacifica businesses coming through. And actually what I decided is that actually we have to plant seeds. So it is about developing programs and planting seeds that might start small. That is about building that pipeline. I think also, you know, one of the things that I've really come to embrace, and it's a best book ever, is Wayfinding Leadership. And it's actually a very New Zealand Indigenous leadership model that's actually based on the fact that, you know, a lot of our ancestors found their way here on boats that weren't very seaworthy, travelling huge distances using their understanding of celestial navigation, ocean currents. And so in a lot of the workshops that I lead, I talk about actually those frameworks drawing on actually our heritage, and actually the future is so chaotic and so dynamic that's coming towards us. We need to be drawing on all of these different frameworks for New Zealand to survive. And that includes Western frameworks, which are about precision and measurement. And so actually, you know, what I found is locating, you know, actually, I don't know, putting it into the talent and the that leadership is actually in our DNA.
Resilience.
Yeah. Yeah, and look, for us, it's early days, and I think it is kind of looking outwards in terms of where that talent's coming from. But one of the things that we've done is actually team up with other enterprises. Air New Zealand's a great example. We're going out to communities that otherwise we wouldn't touch. And we're actually just out there like roadshows. We were doing a hui down at the Viaduct of getting a lot of these school children in to go, you know, you could work here. And actually part of it is we've got to inspire and open our doors, because it's not the most inclusive environment. Our partnership with Tupatoa and Ngāti Whātua, you know, we're increasing more and more and more interns to come in. And also I think next Saturday I'm presenting at Manukau, just going, look, you could have a job in this type of organisation. So it is one step at a time, something that we're very, very passionate about. And, yeah, I think linking up with other similar organisations so your efforts are joined up rather than everybody potentially doing a smaller, similar thing.
When I was at Fletcher Building, we put a leadership program called Whakatipu in place. And what we did, it was specific for our Māori future leaders. And the whole program was really built around how we gave them the tools to be comfortable putting their hand up. And so it was about their leadership, their personal why, connecting to what was important to them, and then understanding how to navigate corporates. And then what we did is we partnered them with a Māori leader in the organisation, and we built career plans with them. And then we got their manager involved, and then we managed it from a very planned way. And then when we had roles that came up, they were uncontested. That person was directly appointed. And then we put really strong support and mentoring around them to make sure that they were successful. And that worked really well. They had 50% promotion rate off that program within 18 months.
Yeah, I think these programs are very important, and they are a genuine responsibility for businesses. There's a lot happening in communities in this respect, getting themselves organised and getting together. There's a group who are self-organised from within the Māori community in the north, who are doing a lot of work in bringing people together and introducing them to businesses and preparing them for entry to these sorts of products. There's a very interesting young guy who is from Tokoroa, who's got a thing called Tumiki Enterprise, where he goes around schools and he's organised one quite big hui in Auckland. His next hui is in Tokoroa, which he's organising at the moment, which is to get young people along to meet with and spend time with people from business, often quite senior business people. And I have great hope in those self-generated community organisations, and our need is to link up with them and to sort of blow a bit of warm air on the embers that they're creating and bring it through.
There's a Michael Mocker who runs a company called Indigenous Growth. We partnered with him, and he also helped build out ASB's Whakateria. So he's quite experienced. He built the program. So Michael Mocker, so he would be well worth talking to help you build something out like that.
I think there was a question over here before. Here we go, at the front of the room, please, for the microphone. Thank you. Have we got it coming? Here it comes. Thank you.
Hi, my name is Lana, and I came to New Zealand 4 years ago. You can tell by my accent I'm an immigrant. So we are talking about all those minorities, women, Maori, LGBTI, but there's one more, immigrants. And I haven't heard one story telling that they came to New Zealand and they were welcomed to the workforce. I think it's more than a quarter of professional workforce in New Zealand immigrants constituted. And what I found is that it's very hard to find a job you deserve if you don't have local experience. And I have a lot of friends. I'm from Russia. I have a lot of friends who came here to New Zealand from my country and haven't heard one story saying that it's not an issue, local experience. And it's not about language, really. It's about people not trusting overseas experience, not trusting you because you haven't proved yourself yet. And if you want to get a leadership role, that'll be even more difficult. It's probably impossible if you didn't start from the beginning here. So don't you think it's a bias? And is there anything that can be done? Thank you.
It's an absolute bias. I speak quite a bit at HR events and I talk on this topic frequently, having had friends who've gone through it as well. It is one of the worst things that we put in place. You don't have New Zealand experience, but you might happen to have come from India and worked for a company of 10, you know, millions and millions of people and had experienced 10 times what anything in New Zealand's ever. It's terrible. But it's something everyone in here as a hiring manager can address. Give someone a chance. And we have some amazing people coming into this country. I mean, my sister-in-law ran Accenture Mergers and Acquisition legal team globally, and she can't get a contract general counsel job because she doesn't have New Zealand experience. So she is one of the top global M&A lawyers, and no one wants to talk to her. So... And she's saying, well, can I work for free? No. So how do you get New Zealand experience if no one wants to give you a chance? I couldn't agree with you more. It's a real issue. We bring people into this country because of their skills and education, and then we don't give them a chance. And all I'd say is that we all have a role to play in that and trying to address that. But thank you for raising it.
Yeah, look, I agree as well. I mean, we're pretty lucky at Microsoft because people globally, especially South African, want to come to New Zealand and find that mechanism the way because they've already been part of the organisation. So we're really fortunate. We, in fact, have a huge representation of different people. But I'm, you know, it's events like this. It's speaking up. It's, you know, it is the good old-fashioned networking because we, you know, we are a culture that loves recommending people. So, you know, I would say don't give up. Keep having a voice and reach out to leaders. And, you know, one thing Kiwis are pretty good at, they generally say yes. The amount of people that reach out, please don't do that now, but reach out and say, can I meet with you? Actually, you know, a lot of times you will get the yes. You know, be a little bit specific around what you're wanting to do and hook onto someone that can help you.
We've probably got time for two more questions. Mr. David Boyle has got his hand waving in the air. Can we get a microphone to Dave, please? As seen on the AM show.
Hi, Carly. Hi. Can you hear me?
No. Can we have that mic up, please? Sound. Thank you.
Carly. Hello. Hello.
Hello.
Falling over you, David. There you go. Does that one work? There you go.
I didn't quite expect so much attention. thanks,
the question's
Carly.
Good.
A question to the panel, and I really love the conversation around diversity, particularly at a board level. I wonder, could we extend that diversity around skill set as well? And I'm thinking more about capability. around not just being really good at numbers and profitability, but also thinking about the consumer or customer that you're facing and what you think boards should be doing around their customer, whoever they are, and how we might be able to encourage that, because I think we're definitely lacking given some of the environmental elements that have occurred over the last 12 months, particularly in financial services. I'd love your thoughts.
Yeah, well, I mean, I guess I can answer that, being a company owned by NAB, National Australia Bank. So for those of you who don't know, we've had a fairly tumultuous couple of weeks with our chair and CEO stepping down in the face of issues arising from the Royal Commission into banking conducted by Commissioner Hayne, primarily around customer outcomes. So I think absolutely. I think diversity also is about representing your customer. I look in New Zealand at the diversity in terms of population and making sure boards understand what those demographics want. But I think consumers are getting, and as they should be, far more vocal around their needs and around their rights and what they expect from their service providers. So it's something we're absolutely thinking about. NAB announced a customer advisory board. We're certainly looking at that here, because I think if you provide services to customers and you don't have them at the heart of everything you do, then the likelihood is you'll fail them at some point. So I think the onus is on all organisations, but primarily ours at the moment, for the point you make around how we service our customers.
I agree with what you say. The Hayne report, for those of you who are interested in it, is well worth read, particularly the chapter on governance. And it was, in effect, what Hayne and the earlier APRA report on similar issues were saying was boards need to shift their attention from can I do this to should I do this? And I think it's a very important kind of way to think about it. And one of the things that I've been reflecting on, and you can challenge me if you see me again in about 12 months, is that I think that in our search for board members, we need to assume that you're going to have people who are basically literate and numerate, but place much greater emphasis on the values that the people hold and express in the way they work and conduct themselves. I think it's becoming a far more important issue for us than some of the purely technical skills which are probably present in abundance in the business anyway. So leadership is very strongly about values, and I think we need to focus a lot more on that.
Fantastic, thank you. Two more, I think. We had somebody else this way. Thank you. Oh, there you go, those two.
We've just got a lovely lady who's been waiting.
Hey, I feel like we've heard a lot today about the sort of more general things that you can put in place to encourage various people to rise to the top. But in my experience, which I hope is unique, but I suspect not, that most of the times people fail to get to the top because of one specific instance or multiple instances in the workplace of either bullying or harassment. And this is not just women or people of various ethnicities. I've even heard recently of a man who tried to change which time he could get home from his shift because he was being attacked at his bus stop and no one paid attention. I am yet to hear of any workplace that has solved the issue of, I don't know, reporting or no blame ability to sort of to report these incidents and have something happen as a result that doesn't impact the person it happened to, I suppose. Do you know of any ideas?
I'm happy to take that with my HR hat on. Look, I think the importance of independent whistleblower channels is critical, and having the availability of a service for people, A, to raise the issue, B, to raise it confidentially, and to have someone external from the organisation investigate it, are critical to getting an impartial outcome. So I think those three things are very important. I have seen I've absolutely seen some terrible outcomes for people who have made complaints, and I've seen some terrible outcomes for people who have been complained against, and I've also seen good outcomes. Where I've seen the good outcomes, the process I've seen used is almost like the process they use in the justice arena, where you get a co-facilitated session where people can air their grievances in a really open way, and both parties get the opportunity to understand how the other one's feeling and to try and work it through. Clearly, for that to happen, you have to have two people who want to do that, and that's not always the case. And you have to have a situation where people feel safe, and that's not always the case. But it is very, very difficult when one person makes a complaint against another person, you know, to try and find, especially when it's a very serious complaint, it's a very difficult situation to get to a really harmonious outcome for everyone involved. But I have seen it, and I think organisations, you know, certainly when we have serious complaints of bullying and harassment, more likely than not, you know, we will take steps to protect the person who's making the complaint. And we take it very seriously, and I think most organisations do, but it's very difficult.
Thank you.
Because you also have to protect the person who's been complained against, right? You have, as an employer, you also have a duty to make sure there's a fair process, and so it's hard.
I think we had somebody else down the back corner, is that right? There we go.
Hi, good afternoon. My name is Lynn. I have to say I had a bit of reticence to ask a question because I'm obviously not from New Zealand. I'm from Ireland, and kind of as a bit of an outlooker looking in. But I thought I do employ 5 Kiwis, so I thought that would give me some kind of basis to ask. I think from my perspective, coming to New Zealand, the tall poppy syndrome was not something that I had really encountered growing up. And as I work and employ people here, particularly among women, I encounter those words, not so much the actuality of them really believing that, but I hear that an awful lot. So that's kind of one observation I'd be interested in hearing your view on. But the second one as well is that in Ireland there's been quite an increase in women in leadership in the last 5 years, particularly in the banking sector. But I think that one of the things that has been changed from a patriarchal model in Ireland is actually how people are employed as women in terms of being able to have families, collect their children, raise people, or like raise children. And for that to be really admired as an accomplishment in and of itself as part of the workplace. And observationally here, it's not something that I hear admired very often. And I think that that in and of itself is a true form of leadership. Those ladies are not sitting on boards, but they are creating the future of this country and the future of this nation. And I just think that I can't help but feel that there is a parallel between the kind of tall poppy sense and this kind of sense of reticence of saying, hey, I'm contributing to this society. I know there's a couple of different issues in that question, but just really, yeah, really was interested in hearing any views on those.
We use tall poppy as an excuse, don't we? We go, oh, yeah, that's tall poppy syndrome. It's not okay.
Yeah, I think for me, you know, there is a little bit of that element of, from a Kiwi perspective, we know we need the large telcos and we know we need the large banks, but we sort of feel a little bit aggrieved at how well they're doing. And you know, I'm not really sure why that is. And, you know, I also hear it quite often. I think Mike King was just made, you know, got an award and he's, you know, got to shut down this tall poppy. And I don't think it really is incorporated in the full DNA. I truly think we should all be proud of the New Zealand economy in terms of how well our companies are going, innovation and what's going on. And also, you know, back on, you know, sort of bringing people in from other countries, you know, a really quick short story. We've just employed the most incredible lady. I'd love to tell you exactly which country she's from, but she doesn't have a Kiwi accent, and she was 6 months pregnant. And, you know, I just thought, wow, you know, that is mind-blowing. In fact, this woman's so incredible. She had the baby at 2 o'clock in the morning and drove from the hospital into Microsoft to get her laptop with the baby on the way home. But, you know, this to me is actually, we do have to employ for the skill set, and we do need to encourage that. And, you know, I think we've got to celebrate those types of stories.
Our leadership team went away for an away day recently, and the facilitator said to us, "So how do you feel turning up to the leadership meetings?" And we said, "Well, it's not dreadful." And that sort of became this the thing. It's, "Oh, it's not dreadful." And working with entrepreneurs, and, you know, there's a story about, you know, pitching for investment overseas, and American person might say, "You know, so how's the business going?" "Well, it's not bad." You know, so there is something in our language, you know, our psyche of Kiwi-ness in, that we have. I think, you know, also working with entrepreneurs and innovators, they are naturally or need to be boastful. So I've grown up, you know, around a lot of those that have to really sell themselves, you know, to, in order to, you know, survive to the next pace. But then moving into the culture and heritage sector, it's the complete reverse, and it's all about, actually, I'm not the expert. So, you know, Tall Poppy is as much about how we treat others that put their hand, you know, their hand up to lead or to stand out, and also what we are also generating within ourselves.
And we've touched on flexibility and how wonderful that is, and how that's one of the main barriers for women in promotions and leadership roles. Do we have one last burning question? Fantastic.
He just got made redundant from his job because while he was performing really well, it's a tech company, I think installation of surveillance sort of products. He got he was the one that got the redundancy notice on Waitangi Day because he was. And it was cited by his boss that the reason that they chose him is because he took 3 hours out of his week to pick up the kids. And he was the one that was the fall guy, which I think is really sad in businesses today. And the reason I bring it up is it's not
just... You might
want
to tell them legally they can't do that with the HR Act. I'll tell you after.
Yeah. So, yeah, and it... As I say, it's just not just that flexibility in the working hour. There's a guy that's trying to meet that, and he ends up being the fall guy. I think it's really sad.
Yeah, men are trying to be equal partners in home life in that situation, and
I think it's, Carly, the last couple of questions make an important point for us that we come, or I end up coming to a reasonable number of these events that are talking about diversity in leadership. And I think diversity in leadership is important because of what it can achieve. And it's not a good thing necessarily in itself. It's not a bad thing in itself, but it's important because of what it can achieve, to my mind. And the health of a society is not determined by how well its leaders and its stars get on. The health of a society is determined by how most of the people's working life and community life and family life goes. So important to remember, I think, when we're talking about these diversity and leadership issues, that we need that diversity because it produces better outcomes for all of us, not because it makes people at the top feel better.
Nicely said. Okay, that ends
our
panel. We just
have one more question.
Yeah,
sorry,
sure.
Sorry, Carly, just over here. Yeah.
Oh, over here. Here we go.
Yeah, sorry about that.
That's right.
Sort of more of a point, Kate. I picked up that when you were talking about the bullying response, you used the term whistleblower. Now, it's a known term, and what my question or point is around the fact that we use language now that we don't even realise. We're talking about biases or whatever. But if you're a person who's going to do right or going to help solve a situation like the guy getting beaten up at the bus stop or whatever it was, and you're going to get labelled a whistleblower, it's quite a negative term. So my question is, do we need to actually start changing the language and terms that we use to describe these things? So if you're, instead of calling it a whistleblower, a change maker, I don't know, but there's probably something more appropriate, but we're still stuck in that language and that mentality that if you speak up, you're a whistleblower. So who's going to be that whistleblower versus who might be a positive change maker?
Oh, no, I agree. I think that the term whistleblower is, you know, punitive and, you know, not constructive. So I would definitely agree with that. I mean, I think, you know, of all the cases that I've been involved in where people have stood up and spoken up, they're enormously courageous, and it's a very difficult thing for them to do because they have a fear of, you know, repercussions, and often the complaints are about their boss or a co-worker, and they make it knowing that, you know, their work environment's going to forever be different or and difficult. So they're normally very courageous, and you know, I have the huge amount of respect for people who do that, and I agree. I think whistleblower is not a particularly positive term. So,
One of our previous panellists, actually, her take home was Bridget from Contagion. She said, just call it out. If you hear language that does have bias, just call it out. Say, you don't realise you're saying it, you know. The CFO from Trade Me in Wellington said she banned the word guys from her workplace. Everything was, hey guys, and it just wasn't right. So calling it out is a great thing. Thanks for your last point there. Okay, I think we're done. Don't leave me, okay? I'm just going to thank these guys, these people, these lovely... I still do it. It's really hard, guys. So please put your hands together for our wonderful panellists. Rob Campbell, Vanessa Sorensen, Tui Taho, and Kate Daly.
You have been listening to the podcast from the M2 Women Journey to Excellence podcast series. These conversations are from our live forums held in 2018 and 2019. For more details, go to journeytoexcellence.co.nz.